Cycle. We're both funny ladies who like to be funny. So what was your first experience of making people laugh?
We're in church and let us kneel, let us stand, let us sit. That's what the priest says, and the whole congregation follows suit. And I'm like 5 years old, and I looked up at my mother, and it's dead quiet in church, and I asked her really loudly, I said, why doesn't he make up his mind? And the whole congregation burst out laughing, and I was like, this is great.
I love this kind of attention.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
It is the noon hour. Thank you for joining us on your lunch hour. Welcome back. If you're with us on the 11 o'clock hour, I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And now that we're in the educational hour,
yes,
the policy hour is typically what we try to talk about during your lunch hour and try to teach you something. So it turns out that the EPA enforcement against polluters is the lowest it's been in 22 years. According to new EPA data, despite hopes that the Biden administration would reverse a long-term decline in environmental enforcement, the number of civil cases closed against polluters in the fiscal year of 2022 was the lowest it's been in at least two decades. So, here to talk about why this happened and what needs to be done is Mr. Eric Schaefer, who is the executive director of the Environmental Integrity Project and former director of civil enforcement at the EPA. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thanks for having me.
So that doesn't sound good.
No, it's not. And it's this decline in enforcement, and we're talking about enforcement that makes people who violate big companies, actually, in that's who U.S. EPA generally targets, making companies that violate the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, and other federal laws that protect the environment, clean up their illegal pollution and pay penalties. And I'm worried that U.S. EPA is losing its ability to do that. There's a little bit of good news this year I just want to sneak in, which is in 2023, this is the first time I've seen Congress actually appropriate a little more money for enforcement in real dollars. There'll be an increase, not enough to get EPA all the way back to where it was, but it'll be a good start.
So I think when I first heard about this, and on its face, without being an environmentalist, I mean, I care about the environment, but this isn't like, it's not my job. And the first thing that popped into my head is the ruling that came down from the Supreme Court last summer that basically, if I remember correctly, was a pretty big blow to the EPA. Do these two things correlate?
No.
Okay.
That was an unfortunate decision. It cut into EPA's power to regulate carbon from power plants. Enforcement is about making people comply with laws that are already on the books.
Okay.
And in the past, that used to be a bipartisan concern. And frankly, if you look at polling data, it still is. You see, I should say nonpartisan, you see Republicans, Democrats, all supporting enforcement of environmental laws by pretty big margins. But there's been a determined effort to drag down EPA's capacity to do that. I'm talking about the US EPA. Through budget cuts. So over the last 10 years, EPA has lost a third, nearly a third of its enforcement staff, more than 1,000 people. That's a big drop in capacity. That means you're losing scientists, you're losing engineers, the inspectors you depend on to get out and check on compliance, the investigators, and the attorneys who bring the cases. So the workforce has really been crippled.
So then, How do we turn it around? Because I imagine that if it's the more that it feels like people, there is no enforcement, the more people are going to try to get away with stuff.
Well, yeah, it's that's common sense. You if you can't enforce the law, it's not really a law.
Yeah.
people don't have to comply with it. And over time, yeah, the big polluters will get the message. They'll start to slack off. And people should worry about that. When EPA does do enforcement actions, when they are able to land them, you can see the benefits of the bigger cases. EPA will say, we are requiring this polluter to eliminate 200 tons of hazardous air pollutants a year. We're requiring them to clean up emissions that cause smog. And they give you really some pretty big reductions that come out of these cases and illegal pollution that would have just continued if there hadn't been any response from EPA.
So, because this is a show that reaches across Wisconsin and it's called As Goes Wisconsin. And so trying to, obviously there's this stuff that's happening around the country, but how does this relate back to what's going on here? Like I think about, we talk a lot about PFAS and there's so many contaminated wells, our fish and everything. So like, how does, you know, from what I've read, Wisconsin is acting with the EPA to correct problems with like the Clean Water Act compliance. And so like how do we continue to do that? Or how does a state compliance can like go off course?
So that's a great question. For PFAS, which frankly, EPA has sat on way too long. Mm. The agency knew more than 15 years ago that this chemical was a really a bad one once it got in the environment. In very small concentrations can be dangerous. They are finally getting around to regulating it with support and help from states like Wisconsin. So in that case, there hasn't been a lot to enforce because the limits haven't been locked in. When you enforce, you're generally looking for an emission limit or a limit on how much you can discharge from a wastewater treatment plant. And we just haven't had them for PFAS. I think EPA is going to get that done finally, and that'll be important. Very important for lots of communities, but you have also a number of plants in some cities that discharge more than their permit allows, discharge more bacteria, discharge more nitrogen, which creates algae blooms that, you know, choke the oxygen out of water. You've got chemical plants, paper mills that emit more hazardous air pollutants that you're allowed to do. And EPA needs to walk that perimeter. So EPA shares responsibilities for states, including Wisconsin, for enforcing federal law. Wisconsin's budget for environmental protection between 2008 and 2018 was cut by 35%.
I wonder what happened in Wisconsin during that time period of why that, who could have been in charge in that time period?
Yeah, well, you had that, you know, that Koch governor.
Who did?
Walker, right? That was
indeed
his name. So, yeah. And, you know, you do get this from very conservative politicians who are always going after EPA and trying to cut its budget. They'll say, well, the states can do it. Let the states do it. Then you turn around and look at what essentially that same crew of ideologues is doing at state level, and they're cutting the state budget. So we have this kind of shell game that's played where in Washington, they tell you the states are going to pick up the slack, but in state capitals, they're cutting the environmental budgets also. So not good.
Not good. So as of right now, because I actually don't know, like, would Wisconsin be considered to be in compliance or are we in non-compliance?
Well, you have, for water quality standards, a lot of rivers and lakes that aren't meeting federal water quality standards, and that's based on state reporting. The states go out, assess the condition. The Clean Water Act's 50 years old, more than 50 years old now, and way back then, it promised fishable, swimmable waters by about the late 1980s, 1987, I think, and all right, maybe that was a little ambitious, since getting water pollution down and making the waters safe for aquatic life and for people who want to swim and fish, that's a hard slog. But nationally, I'm sorry, I don't have the Wisconsin numbers at my fingertips, but I think they're in line. Half of the rivers and more than half the lakes don't meet water quality standards. Wow. You know, they're either not safe for recreation, they're not healthy enough to protect fish and aquatic life, or in some cases, they aren't meeting either standard. So we have a long way to go. And there are lots of reasons why we haven't made the progress that we expected. But one of them is you've got to enforce the laws that are supposed to reduce the pollution that is causing that kind of water quality deterioration. You really do. And you start slacking off on that. And I think this is common sense, and I probably don't need to explain it further.
It's funny because it is common sense, but sometimes when it gets into bigger policy things, because if it comes to violent crime, when we talk about enforce the laws, like the laws are the laws. And so when people break the laws, I think you think of like it is on behalf of the prosecutors and the criminal justice system to pursue that. And it seems much more visceral to wrap your head around of that being logical versus we have laws around our environment. And it's basically that they're not being enforced right now because of the budget.
That's it. I mean, in a nutshell, that actually, let me, I might complicate that just a little bit more.
Well, you got 2 minutes before our next commercial, so you got.
Well, there are morale issues. The agency's gone through 4 years of Trump. You had the pandemic, which I think affected work everywhere. And I think people understand that. So that's a problem. But of course, a lot of the morale issues relate to you're seeing your colleagues leave and people you've worked with a long time, they're not being replaced. And you're less and less able to do the work that brought you into public service in the first place.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're going to take a break quickly, but our guest is Eric Schaefer, who's the executive director of the Environmental Integrity Project. We're going to hear more about what that organization does when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
If you should stand, then who else to guide you? If I knew the way, I would take you home.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are talking to Eric Schaefer, who is the executive director of the Environmental Integrity Project, about the low point that we're having right now as far as enforcement of environmental laws when it comes to polluters actually being held accountable. And we had to break kind of and cut you short, but just to go circle back as far as like the core message here is that we have laws. These are laws that have been passed and expectations of what manufacturers and companies who produce pollution have to abide by. But the fact that, like any law, if you can potentially get away with it, there's going to be some bad actors who are going to push the envelope knowing that they can get away with it, right?
That is right. I think most people get that at gut level. There's a great quote from Abraham Lincoln. I hope it's true. I know that everybody quotes Lincoln, but he supposedly said a law without enforcement is just good advice. And I've always liked that. They're telling you what, you know, you should do, but they're not telling you what you must do. And when you're talking about big companies that are managing money to hit the bottom line, if it's not something they have to do to protect the environment, they'll do some things out of the goodness of their heart or to be civic but a lot of things are going to slide, and I don't think the public wants that.
And Eric, it just seems so counterintuitive to me. If you're going to kill off all your customers, that's going to really hurt your bottom line.
You would think that's right. And the truth is that sometimes it's hard to hold the culprits accountable. But the history is pollution continues. It keeps happening thanks to a group of sources or sometimes a particular plant. Over the years, people find out, wow, it's gotten really bad. Now it's in the groundwater. Now it's, you know, it basically permeates the whole site. It's going to cost a whole lot of money to clean it up. It would have been much cheaper to keep it out of the environment in the first place. That's the story with PFAS. And on that thing of cheaper, I just want to get in this plug, because I know, you know, people worry about government spending and how much is too much and so on. This is a very inexpensive program in terms of the value it produces, not just in protecting public health, but the program gets penalties from polluters. The penalties go to Treasury, and over time, they pretty much offset the amount that's spent on hiring the enforcement staff. If you want one figure, the cost overrun on a single aircraft carrier, the Gerald Ford, I think it finally is getting launched, was nearly $3 billion. That's enough, or I'm sorry, nearly $2 billion. That's enough to pay for the entire EPA enforcement program for nearly 4 years. And I'm talking about the amount of money wasted on a single ship. So this is not even an asterisk. It's not that expensive. It's a program that protects public health and protects natural resources. And polluters end up having to pay penalties that pretty much covers the cost. The money doesn't go back to EPA, it goes to Treasury. But, you know, obviously that balances out the amount that you have to spend to have the program.
Absolutely. Well, I know we have to let you go soon, but just quickly, let people know what the Environmental Integrity Project is and does, and if there's anything they can do to help or get more information.
We're a watchdog organization. We do sue polluters. This is the only country in the world where citizens can actually sue violators. Clean Wisconsin is an environmental group that does great work on that locally. Yep. Support them whenever you can, because they can help to, they will never replace EPAs, and they'd be the first to say that, but they can help take up some of the slack. The other thing, and I know everybody's tired and busy and has too many things to do, but there's no substitute for letting your politicians know, your elected representatives, care about the environment, you want to see the programs funded, you want to see enforcement. It does make a difference, and you know, any time people can spare to do that would be you know, really well spent.
All right. Well, I don't know if we've had anyone on from Clean Wisconsin on the show yet, so we'll have to make a reach and have them on regularly. But we thank you so much for your time today. This is super interesting, and more people should know about it. So thank you for your work, and thank you for spending time with us, Eric.
Thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Have a great day. Well, that was. It's always, we have to balance the good with the bad.
We do.
On this show.
We do.
Sometimes the ability to, inform people about the world around us and things that are happening, but then also try to balance it with some good news. But I think when we come back for the bottom of the next segment, it's not going to be more good news, because how would you feel if your coworkers carried a gun to work every day? No problem. A little scared? Would you want to quit that job? Would you want to carry? If you could bring your gun to work today, every day, would that be a good thing? Because in the Capitol, they're having that discussion right now, and we're going to talk about it when we return. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Thank you for joining us today during your lunch hour. It is 12:33. It's 26 degrees outside. At least it is in Waukesha. How warm is it where you are? Warmer? Colder? I guess it's warmer than it was earlier this week.
Absolutely.
So
we'll take it.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, we'll take it.
No matter where you're listening, across Wisconsin, across the Civic Media Network, online, on the app, thank you for tuning in. And a reminder that if you miss any part of today's show, you can always listen to it as a podcast, which you can find at asgoeswisconsin.com or wherever you find podcasts. And as always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. Or if you're watching the live stream, we can now see all your, in real time, we can see all their comments. So anyone who's listening or watching on YouTube or Facebook, because we're using StreamYard, we can have them all come in. So shout out to Tim Accolo, who just said, thanks for having Eric from EIP on. Been working in that field for a decade and oddly never heard of him, I think.
Wow.
So I would imagine there's a lot of people. It's always funny because we're like, I'll say it, attention whores like us.
Yes.
You know, it's our job to be out there in front of people and we want people to know who we are versus, you know, policy people and people who have very serious jobs.
Yes.
Who it's their main goal is not to be known. It's to get
things done. Yes. Important things done.
And so, but he was great.
Yes, he was.
Clearly is very knowledgeable. And it seems so obvious. It's the same thing we were kind of talking about yesterday when I was so fired up about Title IX and, you know, the spirit of the law versus fudging the numbers to get around the law versus in this case, it's also just people outright being like, well, if we don't get caught or we don't get prosecuted, we might as well just keep doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel like it goes back to this idea of, and I don't know if I made myself clear as I was trying to compare it to quote unquote crime, like the crime that political ads are run on. And we're like, well, don't do the crime if you can't do the time. And the truth is, these are also companies that are committing crimes. They're breaking the law. But for some reason, the same thing with insider trading.
Yep.
And all this kind of like white collar business type law that isn't violent or directly violent and doesn't feel as directly threatening as gunshots and fights and robberies and reckless driving. But it's still hurting people.
Without a doubt.
And we just don't have that visceral reaction of, oh, no, they should be prosecuted and held accountable.
Well, especially because they're poisoning us.
Yes.
I think that's kind of a big thing. And I think one thing that all of us should take away from what Eric said, call your lawmakers.
Mm-hmm.
Call your lawmakers and tell them to fund Clean Wisconsin, to stop encouraging companies to poison us. Call your lawmakers and let them know what bothers you. That's the only way. It's the only, and I would badger them because we're the
badgers.
Be
annoying.
Yeah. Be annoying. Don't be rude and don't be offensive and don't threaten anybody, but it's persistence, folks. It is. It's persistence.
Well, and it does sound, we haven't talked about it on the show yet, but it does sound like from Republicans in Wisconsin, the call for how bad PFAS has gotten is starting to sink in. Because I think it was this week that they're starting to signal that part of their budget will also address PFAS.
Yeah, because I'm assuming they heard from some of their constituents who said, stop poisoning me.
It's like, I'm a Republican and I don't want to die. You know, it's like, exactly. It's like, it's things like this that shouldn't be partisan.
Truly.
And so, but one thing that definitely is partisan, at least when it comes to our country's capital, is whether or not you should be able to carry a gun into congressional committee rooms.
Yeah.
So this was this morning?
Yesterday.
This was yesterday, but Republicans quash. Does it mean the same thing?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Quash is just, I like quash.
I like quash too, but I always would assume squash. Like, like you little, when you squish someone's head, when you close one eye and you take your forefinger and your thumb and you just, when you really don't like someone, you're like, I wish I could just smush your head.
That, squash is different than quash. Quash is like putting a stop to something, not squishing something.
No. There's some people I wish I could squish some today.
I hear you.
And just go away.
Okay.
All right. Republicans quash Democratic ban on carrying guns in a congressional committee room. So there was a Democratic amendment to ban firearms from the hearing room for the GOP-led House Natural Resources Committee, and it sparked a contentious debate on Wednesday. And so this is, if I understand this correctly, this is different than even taking the metal detectors away from the Capitol, right? Like, this is really moving forward on members of Congress just being able to carry throughout the Capitol.
Well, okay, so here's how I understand this. The Republican-controlled Rules Committee removed a provision that had been in place for the previous 2 years prohibiting firearms in hearing rooms and committees. One of the first things they did when they got into the majority was to take out the magnometers, but now they want to allow them to be able to have firearms in congressional meeting rooms.
And I guess, I mean, my bigger question here, because none of us necessarily work in the Capitol, so on its face, does this affect most Americans as far as what's happening in their workplace? I don't know, but I think the question is, would you feel comfortable? Have you ever worked in a place where it was okay to carry a gun in the office? You?
Jay. Me? No.
I don't think I mean, I don't even know if I've worked in a place where that was even addressed, because the assumption was you don't bring a gun to work. Granted, I know that I've lived in very liberal places, and so I don't know in L.A., Berkeley, San Francisco, or New York City, if any place. And so there's just like, it's never even a question. Now, I'm sure there are places in Wisconsin that is a discussion.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
As far as people who have a concealed carry permit and the conversations that happen with their employer on whether or not they're allowed to have that gun in the office with them and what the conversations become, when someone wants to bring a gun to work and other people are uncomfortable with that. And I don't know who wins. I mean, it doesn't sound necessarily like the Democrats are going to win and they're just going to have to deal with it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, pretty much.
And you said you had a clip from this?
I do have a clip. It's a little bit long, but it's worth taking a listen.
The decision as to whether or not the chair believes that firearms should be permitted in this committee is determined by House admin. But the committee has not been in touch with House admin as to whether this should or should not be allowed. And so therefore, we're just going to leave this ambiguous.
I believe it's up to every member of the House to follow the House rules. And I'm sure you can visit with House admin staff at any time.
By show of hands, we just had members of this committee indicate that they do plan to bring guns into this committee room.
No, said you asked if we would want to.
I also asked who feels so threatened in their safety that they would need to bring guns into this committee
room.
That's
not saying that even plans to.
Okay, so the indication was in the affirmative when that question was asked. So, Mr. Chairman, simply say it's up to every member to interpret the
rules. The member reclaims his time.
When you have reason, when you have reason to believe committee members right here intend to bring weapons into this committee room, and Mr. Chairman, we're entitled to your interpretation of the House rules. You need to tell them that that's either okay or not for the safety and security of this committee.
Mr. McClintock, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
I just wonder if the gentleman from California or the gentlelady from New York has reason to believe that there is a homicidal maniac amongst us. If they do, they probably would have brought a gun into this room whether or not there is a law. And I would challenge them right now to present their evidence, name the names, and present the evidence before such a catastrophe confronts us.
Does anyone respond to that?
It's long.
It's long?
It's long.
Because you just sent that. I didn't know that this happened. You sent this to me this morning, and I was like, well, I feel like it's interesting. I mean, one, it's the Capitol. It's also I haven't worked there, a contentious work environment for certain people,
yes.
It feels like. I mean, think about, I mean, I still think that what they all went through on January 6th, especially AOC, as someone who, you know, AOC, Nancy Pelosi, women in general, I'm sure, I mean, even as much as I do not like Lauren Bobo and Marjorie Taylor Greene, I'm sure that they get vitriol and death threats and stuff from people, from crazy radical people on the left who hate them so much.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it just feels like, why do you need a gun in the Capitol to do your job? Is it to protect against the next January 6th?
I don't think so. And referring to AOC, let's not forget Paul Gosar, who was in this meeting yesterday, put up a very violent video about killing her.
I know.
I mean, and she's been verbally accosted by other members of Congress who have sworn at her in her face.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we want to bring guns because it's fun. I don't know.
And
I don't know which lawmaker it was who said, well, we didn't say we would bring them. We just want to bring them. What?
We just got a message on Facebook. It says, if a person is carrying a concealed firearm, then no one would even know about it. If you're doing it to get attention, then there are more issues. If they are, if they allow members to carry, are they going to allow the public to carry as well? The rules should be applied to everyone equally. That's from Nick Baker on the Facebook live stream.
That's interesting, Nick.
It is interesting. And that's what I and that's why it's like, instead of, because this is something that we can say who said what as far as our representatives who are debating this in the Capitol. But I also think it just goes back to try to make it more personal. Like when you work with someone, and I think this is, like I said, I think this is a real thing in Wisconsin because we have a lot of gun owners. We have a lot of responsible gun owners.
Absolutely.
And for the people who feel safer for one reason or another to be have a gun on them and have a gun on them at work, where is the line between you feeling safe because you think you need a gun and hypothetically me feeling safe because you have a gun?
Or feeling unsafe because you have a gun.
And I guess it comes down to, you know, in private companies, they get to set the rules. They're like, this is the work policy. You can't bring your gun to work.
Right.
And, but I know, I think this was it Racine or Kenosha where they changed their, in the like county buildings, you now can carry. And they changed that last fall. And I think it was a big deal because it was kind of like, well, who gets to feel safe?
Texter from the 920 at 844-967-2789 says the one time in history when congressional members arguably had cause to utilize self-defense was the direct results of the rhetoric and lies amplified by the same idiots who would actually bring a gun into Congress.
Thank you for the text.
Yes.
I just don't get it. I don't get why they are arguing that this is a good thing for them to be able to carry a gun to work in the Capitol and arguably, if not objectively, a place that you definitely don't need one unless you are, it's not like you're engaging necessarily a lot with the public and need to like protect yourself. Unless it's exactly that, unless it's like, well, you never know when another January 6th is going to happen. We're all
sitting ducks. Right. And if they presented it that way, I think there would be some validity to that, but that's not what it is. That's not what it is. Because the same people who want to bring guns will say it was just a regular tourist visit on January 6th.
I know. Well, we're not going to solve anything today. But if you do have experience with this debate in your workplace, I think it's super interesting to hear either how, if you were a owner of a business who has had to make this call, or you are someone who would like to be able to bring your gun to work, or you're someone who has had to talk about this in work. I've never been in the situation where this has been a debate or a conversation.
Me neither.
I think there's other people who definitely have been in this situation. And so if you are one of those people, 844-967-2789, if you want to either give us a text or shoot us a call, we'll keep the conversation going. Otherwise, when we come back, Wisconsin in the wild. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. So I was in the Dells last weekend.
Yes.
And I went and got coffee or something like that. And there's a big, like, it's kind of as you turn to go to, like, the main down, like, the old school downtown.
Sure.
And lo and behold, I went in there. I got the Starbucks that is in that little plot now. But, and I did. I drove by the McDonald's that is also in that little area.
Okay.
And 2 days later, news broke that the Wisconsin Dells McDonald's, named one of the most beautiful in the world by Architectural Digest.
My goodness. That's quite the honor.
Quite the thing, right?
Wow.
And so when planning a trip, going to McDonald's usually doesn't make it into the itinerary. But when you're in the Dells, this architectural behemoth, maybe go check it out. It looks like a log cabin. But yeah, according to a recent Architectural Digest report that compiled the 13 most beautiful McDonald's in the world.
Brought to you by McDonald's.
And now I feel like I need to know where the other ones are. Because I would have expected maybe a different, more prominent city in the United States than Wisconsin Dells. Not that I don't love the Wisconsin Dells. It's very fun. We had a great time at the Wilderness. But, you know, just to reference some of the other cities that have beautiful McDonald's, Porto in Portugal, Budapest in Hungary.
Oh, wow.
Batumi in Georgia.
Lisbon. Really? In Batumi, country of Georgia?
The country of Georgia. It's like, it
Son
looks like a
gun.
Spaceship. It's all glass.
Wow.
Lisbon, also in Portugal. Portugal got two. In one in the Netherlands, it's also all glass and really cool looking. One in Hungary, that's like in an old, like, historic building, it looks like. There's one in Downey, California, that looks like an old original, kind of like 1950s, maybe was, actually, yeah. Bring you the oldest McDonald's in the world.
Oh, cool.
And it still kind of looks as retro as it actually is.
I'm surprised they get that much leeway as a franchisee. I thought McDonald's in particular would be really specific about design.
I mean, looking at this, they're all pretty different. There's one in New Mexico, in Roswell, New Mexico, that looks even more like a spaceship. It literally looks like the Graviton at the state fair.
Oh.
That I definitely threw up on once when I was a kid. New Hyde Park, New York. It's like an old looking white estate. It looks like a big mansion.
Chic.
Yeah. There's one in Australia, Sedona. And then there's this one in Freeport, Maine that just looks like someone's house. It's like built in a colonial style home. And then Wisconsin Dells. It's the last one. It's 13 out of 13.
Hey, we made the list. Take that, Illinois. Ha.
And so, you know, what was funny though, because as we were driving down, I had this memory kind of unlock of Fort Dells. And it closed before I was born. So it closed in 1985. But then it sat empty for my entire childhood. And I remember, because I think a lot of kids probably feel this way because there's such a mystique around the Wild West. And as a kid, I think I also had some of that of, you know, the general store and the frontier. And I just played a lot of Oregon Trail. And do you ever go to Fort Dells?
Well, someone just called and said that's kind of probably where the design for that came from.
It might have been.
Was Fort Dells.
It might have been the inspiration. And so, because I remember as a kid being so, well, one I remember, do you remember Storybook Gardens?
Of course.
So that was still open when I was a kid.
Was it really?
Yeah. And so it was not for very long, but I have some like very early memories of being at Storybook Gardens. And I don't even know what's there now.
Something much more fun than that.
Was it not fun? I remember it very, I have very fond memories. Granted, I think I was 3 or 4.
Well, yeah.
But like,
I just remember, I mean, even when I was a kid, it seemed kind of beat up. I can only imagine what it was like by the time you went.
Well, I don't remember. Because I think it closed
shortly after.
That.
Yeah.
But I remember always us driving past what was left of Fort Dells. And me being so bummed that we couldn't go in.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, I having, like, a real affinity for wishing that that was still something we could go walk through. Because I was really drawn to that kind of storytelling and those stories as a kid. I don't even know what would have inspired it. Maybe it's because my Uncle Doug really loved Gunsmoke. So that, like, threw up
that whole cowboy
was in my brain as far as, like, cowboys and Indians and stuff like that. But, and then I looked it up and I didn't realize it was built in a response to Frontierland at Disneyland.
Really?
Yeah. So it opened in like the year after Frontierland opened at Disneyland, because it was in the 50s. And it's because I got all nerded out after. I was like, what was that? And so I was looking at it last weekend when we were up there. So did you ever go?
To Fort Dells?
Did you guys go to the Dells often when you were a kid?
We did go to the Dells. I remember Storybook Garden. I remember the house that was crooked the floor was all off. Does that sound familiar at all?
Well, there's still the top secret thing where it's like the upside down White House.
That sounds newer to me.
That's been there for a while, and I've never been inside. But it's hard to miss. It's like on the same block as that. Now Mount Olympus just owns everything. But
see, now you reminded me that I always wanted a pair of those really cool moccasins, and I never got them. Because when I was going to the Dells, there were no water parks. That wasn't even a thing.
So what were the attractions like as a kid?
It was the downtown Dells, and you went shopping, and you got taffy and cotton candy, and then Storybook Gardens, and probably the ducks. The ducks were...
The ducks, yeah.
The ducks were...
So to see the rock formations and everything.
Go do that, and... But it certainly wasn't what it is now. And I think it's really hilarious that, I mean, good for their ambition. We're going to take on Walt Disney with Frontierland.
Florida's really far. Just come to the Dells, Midwesterners.
It's so close to Florida. It's so much like being in Florida.
We never got a space land or all the other different categories. But all right. Well, that will about do it for the noon hour. When we come back, Dr. Mike is here to fix your life. Less about a lineup, because we are getting to the end of the football season.
I know.
So we're going to have to figure out the other fun stuff besides just fixing at least my life. But stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.